Welcome to Law and Liberty, the official podcast of the Chalcedon Foundation, where we're proclaiming the authority of God's Word over every area of life and thought. My name is Chris Ortiz, and I and Andrea Schwartz will be your hosts for this new study, chapter by chapter, through the book Law and Liberty, beginning with Chapter 1. Welcome to Law and Liberty. This is Chris Ortiz. I'm joined here by Andrea Schwartz. Andrea, how are you?
I'm doing well and glad we're back talking with each other on this podcast. I've missed it.
I've missed it too, and these last two I thought were profitable, but we set this up for you and I to work together, so it's good to be back to what the original plan was. And just to throw another wrench in the engine, we're going to change what we're doing a little bit on the podcast, and I like to move forward with things without necessarily thinking them all the way through, Andrea. Sometimes if we ponder and plan too much, we don't ever get anything done. And I wanted to start the Law and Liberty and add you as a co-host, because that's the initial vision that I had. But as we have put a few podcasts in the can and had a great time with interviewing, not that we'll stop interviewing people, but we'd really like to focus on really what is the primary selling point, if I can say that, for Chalcedon. And what is our greatest treasure? Well, our greatest treasure is the work of R.J. Rushdoony, both in his print and audio library. And he covered so many topics, as you know, better than anyone, that there needs to be more and more exposition of his thinking. And you've done this, as we've mentioned on the podcast before, with the group of homeschooling mothers that you work with, taking them through the Institutes of Biblical Law. We're going to do that same thing with a book today, another old one. And why don't you tell the listener a little bit about the book we're going through?
Well, Law and Liberty is probably, if you were ever going to hand somebody an initial Rushdoony book, and you didn't want to overwhelm them with the sheer size of Institutes of Biblical Law, Volume 1, which often is very intimidating to people,
right.
Thousands of pages of text. Law and Liberty is a great one because really what Law and Liberty is a compilation of radio broadcasts that Dr. Rushdoony did years ago, basically presenting the concept of liberty and law from a biblical perspective, recognizing that much of his listening audience didn't really have a good understanding of either one. And so in Rushdoony's style, the chapters are short because the radio interviews or broadcasts, however he actually did them, were not intended to be very long and easily readable in a sitting, but thought-provoking to the point that, at least when I first read it, you know, 20-some-odd years ago, I didn't want to go on to Chapter 2 after I read Chapter 1. I wanted to sit and ponder it for a while and figure out, wow, what does this mean in terms of my life?
Well, they were delivered as radio addresses, and we're going back to 66 and 67. And I think what everybody's going to realize, if they don't know this already, how relevant a lot of what we're going to discuss is, even this first chapter we're talking about today. So I would encourage you to soon get the book, and I say soon because right now the book is being reprinted. The existing copies that we've had have all sold out, and it's been a great handout that we've used at events recently, and that sort of drained us of our supply. So we are relaying out the book, new cover, new everything, but it's going to be the same content. And so as soon as that gets up, we'll certainly let you guys know. But let me just make one little short commercial. Remember that through August 24th, 2009, you still have time to get free shipping on any and all domestic orders from the Chalcedon store. So if you'd like to take advantage of that, you go to chalcedonstore.com. If you'd like to learn more about Chalcedon or the work of R.J. Rushdoony, then faithforalloflife.com is where you want to go. Well, Andrea, chapter one of this book is a phrase that most people from the Reform community or the Christian Reconstructionist community understand and have heard a great deal of, and it's the question, can we legislate morality? And people have heard that before. You know, the old saying is...
can't legislate morality.
Right. And so the response has been that you don't, you know, it's not an issue whether one can or one can't. It's just an issue of whose morality is being legislated. But this particular chapter is extremely insightful because it goes a whole lot beyond that. And just in going back over it again myself, I was just really arrested by several statements. And so I want to just start with one particular quote, and we'll probably read a few more. Obviously, we're not going to read the whole chapter. We're going to kind of discuss some of these themes. But I want to read this. This is what Rush Dooney says. Rush Dooney says, quote, "All law is enacted morality and presupposes a moral system, a moral law, and all morality presupposes a religion as its foundation. Law rests on morality, and morality on religion. Whenever and wherever you weaken the religious foundations of a country or people, you then weaken the morality also, and you take away the foundations of its law. The result is the progressive collapse of law and order and the breakdown of society." Unquote. I think we are reaching that stage now as humanism is almost full bore in its expression. And so he's writing this from the negative standpoint, Andrea, is to say that, you know, the biblical law, for example, in America had been eroded, replaced essentially with humanism. And because it had, you have the breakdown, the collapse of law and order and the weakening of these foundations. But what intrigues me about all of this is that the opposite is true as well, that if the religious foundation is humanistic, then it too can be eventually undermined. And we're going to talk more about our mission to do that. But what do you think about that? Do you think that sort of sums up his whole approach to law? Because a lot of people don't understand that when he talks about law, he doesn't isolate that to just Christian law. I mean, he sees law can be humanistic also.
Well, Rush Dooney looks at law the way he looks at truth. There is one definition of truth. You know, Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. There are many counterfeits that call themselves truth, but in essence, if someone's going to act on a truth, they're going to base things on it, so you're going to see some of the same phenomenon, whether or not somebody's basing it on actual truth or pretended truth. Well, the same thing is true with law. Law has a capacity to shape a society, and so as he points out, if it's humanism, then the result is going to look humanistic. If it's biblical, then the result is going to look biblical. One of the things that he mentions in his institutes, and this is where we're currently going through the just finished up the fifth commandment with my lady study. And it's not just, by the way, homeschooling mothers. They're grandmothers. They're single women. They're people who know that their function as women is to serve the kingdom in the capacity of wives and mothers, etc. But Rush Dooney makes the point that obedience is a religious fact and disobedience is a religious fact.
Right.
In other words, when people disobey God, it's a religious act, and people should understand that. And the whole funny aspect of can we legislate morality, you say that to most Christians today, and they'll say, absolutely not. That's not what we're about. We're not about legislating morality. Why? Because inadvertently or just through osmosis because of how they've been raised or the culture in which they were born into, humanism is the prevailing religion, so we're going to say, oh, no, 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 we don't want to legislate morality. That's not what we're about. When, of course, the humanists understand that's all you can legislate is morality. How can you? What else is there left to legislate if it's not the definitions of right and wrong?
Right. I'm going to read a couple more quotes from him just following that point right there, the fact that humanists are theonomic, and I think people... It's hard to catch that point. You know, we think we typically classify the sinner as, just rebellious and antinomian, even a lot of Christians as antinomian. But really, there are no antinomians. in that sense, unless you go into complete anarchy. But even then, man becomes a law to himself. I think law becomes inescapable when you acknowledge what it is, at least that as Rush Dooney's defining it. Everybody is you know, nomian, I guess, better than theonomian. They are nomian. Whether it's themselves or the state, people are very comfortable with the multiplying aspect of law. Law is just compounded. Law is attitude. Law increases. The more the state increases, the more the bureaucracy increases, the more laws we have. And so you have laws for every detail of life in humanism. So it's the exact same thing that we're saying. It's just in reference to another god. Rush Dooney writes this. He says, our increasingly humanistic laws and courts and legislators are giving us a new morality. They tell us, as they strike down laws resting upon biblical foundations, that morality cannot be legislated. But what they offer is not only legislated morality, but salvation by law. And no Christian can accept this, whether we look now, whether with respect to poverty, education, civil rights, human rights, peace, and all things else, we see laws passed designed to save man. Supposedly, these laws are going to give us a society free of prejudice, ignorance, disease, poverty, crime, war, and all of the things considered to be evil. These legislative programs add up to one thing, salvation by law.
Right. I saw that played out once very interestingly. I had the misfortune back in the early 90s of getting two tickets in the space of a month, one for driving too fast on a city street, like a side street, and the other one inadvertently going through a stop sign. In any case, I had to go to driving school. At the beginning of driving school, nobody in the class was guilty. Mm-hmm. Everybody had gotten a bum rap. By the end of the day, and this was like 8 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, these people, I was astonished, were deciding that in actual fact it would be probably better if only people between the ages of 25 and 45 were allowed to drive, because people under 25 weren't responsible and people over 45 were old and feeble, et cetera, et cetera. And so all these people who started off with, you know, they got a bum rap, the law was against them, they had turned into this little machine that was going to squeeze the problems of the roadways by coming up with their own thing. And some of these people were even outside the parameters of those ages, but they were going along with it because all solutions are going to come by enacting a new law.
And that is, in a way, what the person opposed to Christian theocracy, opposed to Christian Reconstruction, typically accuses us of, that we are in actuality saying salvation by law, that we're coming in to impose biblical law, take over the reins of power, and nobody wants biblical law, but we're going to impose it upon them anyway. And in that way, we are going to create the righteous society that we look for.
And that what's funny about that is, again, just like with that question of, you know, we're not here to legislate morality, you will have Christians who will put their hands on their fists on the table and say, we are not under law, we are under grace. And they will say, we are not under biblical law, we're not under biblical law. Well, okay, so like, tell me, mister, what law do you follow? Right? Because there's going to be a law.
Right.
Right? So instead, what we have is, again, Christians have embraced the humanistic mindset and attacked their own faith by using humanistic arguments. And it's sad because they'll get nowhere, and they'll get nowhere fast.
Well, that's absolutely true. And again, it's something to where they begin with the idea that law is supposed to bring salvation. They don't want God's law, however, involved in any of their ethics, but they still believe in salvation by law. Mm-hmm. And not that we're encouraging them to think of salvation as coming from God's law either, but the point is that they would willingly embrace humanistic law without criticism,
right,
yet despise something as holy and just as God's law.
Right. I'm not an advocate, as you know, of saying the law will save you. But if you thought law would save you, why wouldn't you choose God's law over man's law? right? It shows an orientation error as much as anything else. They're oriented to autonomy. After the recent podcast that I did with the two lovely young ladies, Elizabeth and Anna Sophia Bodkin, I had someone who anonymously wrote me on my blog and said he felt sorry for me and for these women because we had missed the fact that America was founded on autonomy and that we were becoming female robots, and that's what, you know, we were espousing. Well, where did he learn that America was founded on autonomy?
Right.
In other words, but somehow he knows this to be true because that was a premise that he wasn't questioning. He thought he had gotten me because, you see, America was founded on autonomy.
Well, and also the other part about that statement, I'm glad you mentioned that, is if you look at it critically, he's actually the tyrant. Because what he's saying is, America was founded on autonomy. You guys aren't living that out. Why aren't you doing what we dictate to you as America? We're founded to be autonomous, so you must be autonomous. In other words, you and the Botkin girls and whoever else have absolutely no right to live as you choose to live in terms of the law that you choose to live in terms of. He has to write in and tell you you're wrong. He has to impose his morality on you. It's just,
absolutely.
It's absolutely pathetic. I'd love to, if I wasn't a Christian.
Well, we won't go
bless
there.
Bless his name.
Well, but the point is, he has been schooled effectively. And that's what most people don't get. When I'm so tired of hearing conservatives tell me about Obama this, Obama that. You know, Rush pointed out years ago, people will get the leadership that they crave and that matches their own moral ethic.
Right.
You know, right now, why a lot of people are lamenting isn't that our current president is any different than the previous ones, other than maybe he's more receiving less opposition, but now it's infringing on their lifestyle.
Right.
You know, if liberty in the past would have infringed on their ability to go excessively into debt and buy things that they couldn't afford, they didn't want any part of it. Well, now, when everybody has had the full expression of that, and now their economic woes, now they're against it. Except they're not really against it, because given the opportunity to get something that they didn't have enough money for, they try to go into debt and get it anyway.
Yeah, it's like you said, you know, everybody is being faithful to where they started, and there nothing should be surprising about the world in which we live. This is all the result of morality. It's what Rush Dooney said. He said the result is the progressive collapse of law and order and the breakdown of society. Now, we're not seeing the kind of breakdown and rampant collapse of law and order as we possibly can see if the economic and political situation gets even worse, because that's when people absolutely become desperate. But in the meantime, all of the presuppositions are in place. The ethics are in place. The mindset, the worldview is in place. And therefore, if we are going to clamor and protest for the sake of liberty, we then must define the foundations of liberty. And if the foundations to your concept of liberty are humanist, it will always lead to a form of tyranny. And either, if not that, it will lead to a radical anarchism that may even be worse. So, again, as much as I love the freedom movement and all that's going on with people, you know, don't tread on me and the Tea Parties and, you know, end the Fed rallies and all of these things, they will not bear the lasting fruit that they dream in terms of liberty without restoring liberty to the foundation of God's law and eradicating, undermining, and destroying the foundations of humanistic law. I want to read this quote. It seems a little lengthy, but it's just a masterfully written section. And Rush gives this contrast between what we mean between biblical law and humanistic law. He says, quote, "This brings us to the crucial difference between biblical law and humanistic law. Laws grounded on the Bible do not attempt to save man or to usher in a brave new world, a great society, world peace, a poverty-free world, or any other such ideal. The purpose of biblical law and all laws grounded on a biblical faith is to punish and restrain evil, and to protect life and property, to provide justice for all people. It is not the purpose of the state and its law to change or reform men. This is a spiritual matter and a task for religion. Man can be changed, but only by the grace of God through the ministry of His Word. Man cannot be changed by status legislation. He cannot be legislated into a new character. The evil or heart of a man can be restrained by law, and that a man can be afraid of the consequences of disobedience. We all slow down a bit on the freeway when we see a patrol car, and we are always mindful of speed regulations. The fact of law and the strict enforcement of law are restraints upon man's sinful inclinations. But while a man can be restrained by strict law and order, he cannot be changed by law. He cannot be saved by law. Man can only be saved by the grace of God through Jesus Christ. Humanistic law has a different purpose. Humanistic law aims at saving man and remaking society. For humanism, salvation is an act of state. We're seeing this played out right now. It is civil government which regenerates man and society and brings man into a paradise on earth. As a result, for the humanist, social action is everything. Man must work to pass the right set of laws because his salvation depends on it. Any who oppose the humanist in his plan of salvation by law and salvation by acts of civil government is by definition an evil man conspiring against the good society, unquote.
And, you know, I see this played out so much even within the ranks of homeschool and Christians. When people find out I homeschool, they'll say, oh, I'm sure you run a good homeschool, but I know there are some people who don't run a homeschool well. And that's why I think there should be some sort of rules or regulations. You know, immediately they want to solve their problem or what they perceive as a problem by rules and regulations. So when I'll ask the question to say, well, who says that a group of people who sit on a board somewhere have a better sense on what someone should learn when that person is 10 years old? Why don't you think it's a parent's responsibility and liberty to decide, my son is 10 years old, this is what I want him to learn now? And again, they can't conceive of that, because what would happen if people were able to make these kinds of decisions for themselves? That's what they posit as being the worst. They don't posit a totalitarian state claiming that children need to be, you know, in school from the morning till the evening, 10 months out of the year. Some cases now it's year-round schooling, because they cannot perceive of the reality of people being under God and being subject to His laws as they see fit and bear the consequences directly from God. They need to have a centralized law thing, and they need to have it be that it's systematized so that everybody turns out the same way.
Rushdoony says that the new America taking shape around us is a very religious America, but its religion is humanism and not Christianity.
Right.
And I think that's really sad when, as you described, we see these type of things made manifest when discussing the foundational aspects of society, such as the education of our children.
I was just going to point out, for anybody who ever does their research and goes to Wikipedia, they may not know that Wikipedia basically is people send in ideas about some subject, and there's a group of people who approve it. Currently on Wikipedia, there's a lot of false information about Rushdoony. What they don't understand, because some people would say Rushdoony was against desegregation of the schools, or Rushdoony was against interracial marriage, or whatever it is, or Rush was against forced segregation, or whatever. What they didn't get was Rushdoony was saying our laws should reflect God's laws. And legitimate law is when the laws of a civil government are in conformity with the law of God. That doesn't mean that, for example, we're free to break the current laws. As a matter of fact, in the early church, the Christians were the best citizens. If there were laws that they could follow without violating their conscience, they were the ones who did it. They paid their taxes. It's still the case today. The most respectable citizens are those who, even though they think the taxation is too high, continue to pay their taxes, and they're those who might not have an opinion on it and don't pay their taxes at all. The point is, Rushdoony always came down on the side of that law isn't meant to reform people, it's meant to be a reflection of how God wants people to live. So speed laws make sense. You don't want to kill people. That makes sense. Does the Bible say it should be 55 or 80? No, the Bible doesn't specify, but in different localities, 55 may be safe. In other places, 80 might be safe. But what needs to be the prevailing underpinning is what's going to preserve life and not foster the murder, reckless murder of people. But he got a bad rap as if he was pro or against. He was against the government making, the civil government, I should say, making rules that were in contrary to what God had to say.
I will conclude with this last quote here, which sort of amplifies what you just said. Quote, "The basic function of law is to restrain, not to regenerate. And when the function of law is changed from the restraint of evil to the regeneration and reformation of man and society, then law itself begins to break down because an impossible burden is being placed upon it." Unquote. And this is a text he uses earlier from Galatians 2:16, obviously one of those passages that have been used against his position, where Paul says, "Knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ, that we may be justified by the faith of Christ and not by the works of the law, for by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified." Absolutely. We as theonomists believe that with all of our heart. You cannot regenerate, justify an individual by the works of the law. You can't do it with God's law, and you certainly can't do it with humanistic law, but that's what man does. He allows this multiplication of laws around him to regulate his every being because he believes that it is the power vested in the state to create the good society, and we're seeing it played out now. And breathtaking rate right now. I mean, we're moving into a full statist expression at breakneck speed.
Yeah, I think Van Til would have called it epistemological self-consciousness. You have people now not hiding their view that they're going to dominate other people for their own good. Mm-hmm. I'd like to point out that that quote from Galatians, you know, if Paul was so against the works of the law, he could have just said, "Don't bother to do the works of the law." Right. He's making the point, you're not going to be justified by the works of the law, but he wasn't putting down the works of the law. And because, unfortunately, too many of professing Christians today didn't learn how to read with the intent of understanding communication well, and that the verb means this and the noun means this and what modifies that, because they didn't have an overriding sense of why it was important to learn how to read. You know, in the early days of the Republic, people learned how to read so that they could read the Bible. Today, people don't really need to learn how to read all that well to read People magazine, right, or to be able to read the TV guide. But if you're going to really understand, especially a body of work that is claiming to be the Word of God, and have to understand that it wasn't in your original language, it wasn't written in English, but you have to understand that the language that it was written in was very precise and had precise meanings, then somebody can tell people that the law means anything and we're against the law. I mean, another common one, he doesn't really bring it up in this chapter, but I believe he'll comment it on later chapters in the book, is that we don't hate the sinner. We just hate the sin. And as Rush pointed out, when's the last time you just ran into sin that wasn't accompanied by someone committing it?
Right.
You know? But we have all these catchphrases that the enemies of God has put into place, and then Christians go defensive. Well, last I read, the Bible said the gates of hell will not prevail against the Church of Jesus Christ. It didn't say let's hide in a corner and make them like us.
Right.
They're not going to like us.
No, they're not going to like us. And when, as Rush Dooney says, when the humanist tells us, therefore, that you can't legislate morality, what he actually means is that we must not legislate biblical morality, mm-hmm. because he means to have humanistic morality legislated. And it's funny how people contradict themselves all the time by saying that. Because again, it's you mentioned Van Til, it's this inescapable concept. It's there is no neutrality, none. Your morality is going to be informed by your religious presuppositions, whether they be in man, God, or some other source. You have an ultimate authority, which is infallible by nature, which is why Rush Dooney begins, unlike any other systematic theology, he begins his two-volume set on systematic theology with a chapter called Infallibility, an Inescapable Concept. Because it's true, every body has an infallibility that they ascribe their faith to. Everybody has one. And the more that faith is shared by a group, then the more that religious presupposition becomes systematized. Mm-hmm. And the more it becomes systematized, the more it becomes a world order. I just wrote this in an article coming out. It's at the press now. It's called Upon This Rock, Rush Dooney's Ecclesiology of the Kingdom. And in this one particular section, I'm talking about this very point, in that when God wanted to wreak havoc on humanistic man, he always goes after those religious presuppositions. And we saw that also in the Tower of Babel. But for now, I think, you know, what has to happen when we talk about Christian Reconstruction is not so much the fretting our hands over whether a conservative will seize a political office in 2010 or 2012, but that we have opportunity to educate as best we can our neighbor, our family members, our friends, in what real liberty means, what it means to be free under God, which means right. a responsibility to law. And that's what this book is about. Law and liberty. Those are two ideas that are tied together, and the reason why we named this podcast what we did.
Right, exactly. And if there's an overriding theme throughout the entire work of these radio addresses, it's Psalm 127:1. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. And so when you have people trying to, within the context of the Christian church, trying to implement humanistic solutions to get more people to come, to get more people to participate, they're laboring in vain, because unless the house is built on the rock, there won't be a structure that will stand. It will be transient. It'll be vulnerable. And more often than not, it leaves people more like the seed that goes on the ground that has no root. There is no root because they're not building it on good soil, the soil of God said it, and we need to understand it and apply it.
Amen. Well, that's the first chapter. Can we legislate morality? Next time, we're going to be talking about the sanctity of life. And if you, as our listener, do have a copy of the book, I encourage you to go through it with us. Again, Chalcedon is an educational institution, and as much as we have been pleased to have the many guests that we've had on, it's important that we do what we feel like Dr. Rush Dooney outlaid for Chalcedon to do, and that is to educate in terms of the faith, educate in terms of biblical law. And so that's exactly what we want to do, and using his writings as the basic structure for that. So tune in again next time for this, and I think this is going to be an exciting study. I know you're going to enjoy it. Take the time to pass this around. Forward this to someone else today. Help them to learn maybe a little bit more about what you hold dear. Maybe you've had a challenge with getting these sort of ideas across, and you think maybe that this podcast would be a great way to do that, then please send it. It's easy. It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost you a stamp. Just a simple forwarding of an email to someone else can make the difference in their life as they better understand the faith that you hold so dearly. Again, remember that at the Chalcedon store, there is free shipping in the continental U.S. throughout August 24th, 2009. This is a great time to stock up on books and materials, so I encourage you to go to chalcedonstore.com today. If you'd like to learn more again about the Chalcedon Foundation and the work of R.J. Rushtuni, faithforalloflife.com. And Andrea, your web access?
You can go read my blog at www.startyourhomeschool.com. And for women who would like to participate in a mentoring relationship as we go through a lot of this materials and discuss them back and forth from a female perspective, they should go to www.ctti.org. CTTI stands for Chalcedon Teacher Training Institute.
Great. Wonderful. Well, Andrea, thanks again for all your help.
And I look forward to doing this again real soon.
Absolutely. God bless you guys. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.